Sajjana-sanakaya Chaksu-samiratana-dhenita-samiratana-dhenima Sri Chaitanya-manavistam Stapitam-dhenavitale-sayam-dhapakadamayam-dhadati-sakala. Bhansa-kaupa-chukrasya-kutasundu-mahirisa-titram-pabhinebhyo-vaisa-dhenima-nama. So the continuation of the description of the rainy season. Though the clouds, lokabandhushu megheshu, mega means cloud, lokabandha means the friend of the world. Though the clouds are the well-wishing friends of all living beings, the lightning, fickle in its affinities, move from one group of clouds to another, like lusty women, unfaithful even to virtuous men. So the Prabhupada comments. This is during the Krishna book. During the rainy season, lightning appears in one group of clouds and then immediately in another group of clouds. This phenomena is compared to a lusty woman who does not fix her mind on one man. A cloud is compared to a qualified person because it pours rain and gives sustenance to many people. A man who is qualified similarly gives sustenance to many living creatures, such as family members or many workers in business. Unfortunately, his whole life can be disturbed by a wife who divorces him. When the husband is disturbed, the whole family is ruined, the children are dispersed, or the business is closed, and everything is affected. It is therefore recommended that a woman desiring to advance in Krishna consciousness peacefully live with a husband, and that the couple not separate under any condition. The husband and wife should control sex indulgence and concentrate their minds on Krishna consciousness so that their life may be successful. After all, in the material world, a man requires a woman and a woman requires a man. When they are combined, they should live peacefully in Krishna consciousness and should not be restless like the lightning flashing from one group of clouds to another. Important instruction. Because after all, society has to be peaceful. If people aren't peaceful, how will they be able to practically think of spiritual life? People are forever trying to get their material life together in Kali Yuga, looking for that soulmate. But that soulmate, practically speaking, it doesn't exist in this world. Practically speaking, it's the romanticism of it all. People are longing for something that will fulfill the vast emptiness of the heart. But it is romantic to look, to expect it in the relationship between a man and a woman and a woman and a man. It is romantic, hopelessly romantic. Because I once heard this, there was a very famous Catholic author speaking, very devout and Catholic, and he had been married for like 50 years or something, and the interviewer asked him, he was in a room and they were talking about marriage, or came up, they were talking about Catholicism, and came up about marriage, and they say, and someone asked him, what's the key to finding a compatible wife? And his reply was, there's no such thing as compatibility. This is the reality of the material world. Because everyone, Purusha Prakriti Stohi, Munte Prakriti Janaya, everyone is thinking themselves Purusha, the enjoyer, the male. And everyone is trying to center the relationship around their needs. And of course, this doesn't work. That brings, tends to bring conflict, unless there's a very strong culture. When I was in Bangladesh for a few months, I was talking to one of the teachers, one of the gentlemen I was talking to. He said that even to this day in their culture, they live in big families, the Bengali Hindu culture, they're big families, and the women mostly associate with the women, and the men mostly associate with the men. Even today, they don't have the concept of that famous all-explosive family, the nuclear family, the atomic family. They don't have that concept. You know, it's just it's a construct, and everyone takes it for granted. You know, that everything, you know, husband, the wife, the two kids, two cute kids, one boy, one girl, boy's a little older than the girl. You know, it just doesn't exist, in fact, in a peaceful way. So, the instruction here is don't be looking for the spiritual world, complete spiritual satisfaction in something material, in a material relationship based ultimately on the body, because the man is neither the husband nor is the woman eternally a wife. This is a bodily relationship. So Prabhupada is recommending to spiritualize that by controlling sex indulgence, concentrating their minds on Krishna consciousness, so that the spiritual part of the life will be successful. And if the spiritual part of the life is successful, then the material part of the life, which is very important, extremely important, not to minimize it, but yet it is the supportive part. It is not the be-all and end-all part. It is the supportive part. If the supportive part isn't there, it's hectic, it's chaotic, it's turbulence, everything is disturbed. But yet, the supportive part is supportive of something. If someone knows how to make a very wonderful scaffolding to support the construction of a building, but there's no construction of the building, what is the use of the scaffolding? If you have a bridge, but no people to walk across it, what's the use of the bridge? If you have a house but no one lives in it, what's the use of the house? Those are supportive mechanisms for a purpose. They're purposeful. So similarly, marriage is an extremely important social institution. Required to satisfy a man needs a woman needs a man. To satisfy people so that they can properly understand, get all their material needs met, and properly understand what the actual purpose of life is. And not to be flickering, jumping like lightning from cloud to cloud to cloud to cloud. The woman jumping from partner to partner to partner. The man jumping from partner to partner to partner. The ethics of it is, we will stay together as long as we are both meeting each other's needs. And then we shall change partners as we grow, and it doesn't bring any social stability or satisfaction for that matter, or mental stability or emotional stability. And what to speak of what happens to the poor kids. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments on text 17 as follows. A prostitute cannot fix her attention on any one man for long, even though the man may have good qualities such as intelligence. Similarly, the lightning moves from one cloud to another without lingering very long. This is a negative analogy. In other words, it should not be emulated. 18. Dhanurvyatti mahendram nirgunam chagunin yavat vyapte gunavyati kare agunavan purusho yata. When the curved bow of Indra, the rainbow, appeared in the sky, which had the quality of thundering sound, the rainy season, the sky was thundering, and then occasionally there was a rainbow. It was unlike an ordinary bows because it did not rest upon a string. Similarly, when the Supreme Lord appears in this world, which is the world, which is the interaction of the material qualities, he is unlike ordinary persons because he remains free from all material qualities and independent of all material conditions. So that is comparing what to what? The rainbow to the rainbow that appears in the sky of the rainy season, the cloud-filled sky of the rainy season. And compared to? Why? There's no string. Bowstring. And? He has no material support. Although the string, when it did not rest upon a string. Similarly, when Krishna appears, it does not at all rest. He doesn't at all rest upon the material qualities, the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. He is independent of all material conditions and qualities. Here's the purport. This is Prabhupada's comment from the Krishna book. Sometimes, in addition to the roaring thunder of the clouds, there is an appearance of a rainbow, which stands as a bow without a string. Usually, a bow stays in the curved position because it is tied at its two ends by the bowstring. But in the rainbow, there is no such string, and yet it rests in the sky so beautifully. Similarly, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead descends to this material world, he appears just like an ordinary human being, but he is not resting on any material condition. He is sambhavam yapma mayaya. He is appearing by his mercy, not by karma, not by any modes of material nature. We don't choose where we are born, how we grow, what our fate is. We can try our best to manipulate it or make the best out of what we have. But we don't choose these things. We don't choose who our parents are. We are placed in a particular place. And then suddenly we find ourselves conscious, and here we are. You know, in a particular body, with a particular mind, with certain abilities, with certain debilities. But Krishna, so this is all done under the control of the modes of material nature. But Krishna is not like that at all. Everything he does is by his internal energy, by his will, because he desires it. What changes would you prefer to make if you came according to your desire? You'd probably adjust a few adjustments now and here and there. Yes. But Krishna, that's his situation. He comes just because he desires it, and nothing is under his control. Nothing is controlling him. He is controlled, the supreme controller. Text 19. So we had first the lightning, then the rainbow. And now, during the rainy season, the moon was prevented from appearing directly by the clouds that cover it, the covering of the clouds, which were themselves illumined by the moon's rays. See, here's the picture. Here's the moon, here's the sky, here's the moon, and here are the clouds. And we're over there looking towards the clouds, and we see the clouds are illuminated because of the moon. But it's the clouds that are illuminated. We can't see the moon directly because of the clouds. So similarly, the living being in material existence is prevented from appearing directly, just as the moon doesn't appear directly because of the clouds. The living entity, who we really are, isn't manifest because of the clouds. And what is the clouds in this? Yeah, oh, you looked. Yes, it's false ego. Because of a false sense of who we are, by definition, we don't manifest who we are. The living entity in material existence is prevented from appearing directly by the covering of the false ego. And based on the false ego, everything else occurs in the material body, which is itself illumined by the consciousness of the pure soul. So we act as particular individuals. Ironically, we act as particular individuals due to the power, the illumination of the soul, but we are not those individuals who we act as. That's quite amazing. We are something different. We are not the body. We are not the even the mind or the intelligence. This is all coverings. Coverings over who we are. Over who we are. But yet it is the life, the soul, whose symptom is consciousness, that makes the body appear alive and the person appear to be dynamic. Because otherwise, what is the difference between a body, a mannequin, in a store window, in the window of Maya, Mayas? What is the difference between that type of a body and this type of a body? One is clearly alive and the other one is clearly dead. Or non-alive. There's no consciousness. There's no soul in it. But there's a body. You know, it has arms, it has legs, it has a nose, it has eyes, it has ears, hair sometimes. Feet, clothes, there's no soul, so it is not illumined by that. We'll read the first paragraph of Prabhupada's purport. The analogy given here is excellent. Oh, this is not Prabhupada's purport. It's the purport of the BBT translators. During the rainy season, we cannot see the moon in the sky, because the moon is covered by clouds. These clouds, however, are radiant with the glow of the moon's own rays. Similarly, in our conditioned material existence, we cannot directly perceive the soul, because our consciousness is covered by the false ego, which is the false identification with the material world and the material body. Yet it is the soul's own consciousness that illumines the false ego. The peacocks in the rainy season, and I can attest to this. In Vrindavan, there are so many peacocks, and in the rainy season, they're always calling out, Mayor, Mayor, Mayor. They want more clouds, they want more rain, they are satisfied by that. So the peacocks become festive and cried out a joyful greeting when they saw the clouds arrive. Just as people distressed in household life feel pleasure when the pure devotees of the infallible Supreme Lord visit them. Purport. After the dry summer, the peacocks become jubilant with the arrival of the first thundering rain clouds. Unless they dance in great happiness, they call out, Mayor, Mayor, and they dance. Did you ever see a peacock dance? No. Prabhu. You should see one. Okay? Yeah. Okay. Good. And they dance in great happiness. So they go up in a high place and they dance and strut around. It's quite amazing. And they shake their feathers and it makes a sound. Quite amazing sound. And when one uses a peacock fan, shakes the feathers like a peacock dancing. Srila Prabhupada comments, we have practical experience that many of our students were dry and morose previous to their coming to Krishna consciousness, but having come in contact with devotees, they are now dancing like jubilant peacocks. Srila Sanatana Goswami comments on text 20 as follows. Harsha means the satisfaction derived from the arrival of the clouds. Thus, they reply and become joyful. That is to say, they greet the clouds following the thundering of the clouds, the peacocks do, and they dance. And they boisterously engage in shouting and dancing. They're really, really loud. Peacocks are incredibly loud, actually. Well, they can be. This is just in the same way as the Vaishnava householders, after hearing the song of visiting Vaishnavas, also perform singing and dancing. Thus, the three features of festivity, joy, and happiness can be construed as successfully as successive results and sequence of external to internal. So they become festive, and they cry out a joyful greeting, and they become happy. So it's festive joy and happiness goes from external to internal. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments on text 20 as follows. The peacocks become happy and cry loudly upon seeing the approaching clouds and hearing the rumbling of the thunder. They answer the thunder. The thunder, where the peacocks go, Mayur! In reply to that, it's quite amazing. And the clouds rumble again, and then the peacocks, Mayur! Huh? That's what the sound the peacocks make. Yeah. You never heard a peacock? You should come to Vrindavan with Brendan in the rainy season. And you'll hear and see them dance too. Okay, you have it. Okay. Now you can go. The peacocks become happy and cried loudly upon seeing the approaching clouds and hearing the rumbling of thunder. And in Vrindavan they say that the peacocks are saying, Megor! Megor! And Megor means, Mega means cloud. And Or, cloud, more. More clouds, more clouds. They want more. They like the rain. They're calling it. Similarly, yes, this is just like Grihastha Vaishnavas who start to sing and dance in bliss after hearing Vaishnava bhajans. This example is suitable for devotees. 21. The trees had grown thin and dry, but after they drank the newly fallen rainwater through their feet, you can't drink through your feet, but the trees can. So after they drank the newly fallen rainwater through their feet, their various bodily features blossomed. Similarly, one whose body has grown thin and weak from austerities again exhibits his healthy bodily features upon enjoying the material objects gained through that austerity. Purport. The word pada means foot and pa means drinking. Trees are called padapa because they drink through their roots, which are likened to feet. Upon drinking the newly fallen rainwater, the trees in Vrindavan began to manifest new leaves, sprouts, and blossoms, and thus they enjoyed new growth. Similarly, materialistic persons often perform severe austerities to acquire the object of their desires. For example, politicians in America undergo grueling austerities while traveling about the countryside campaigning for election. Businessmen will often deny personal comforts to make their business successful. Such austere persons, upon acquiring the fruits of their austerities, again become healthy and satisfied, like trees eagerly drinking rainwater after enduring the austerity of a dry, hot summer. To the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. As the trees become filled with sprouts, leaves, and flowers during the rainy season, so the tapasis, those who perform austerities, after becoming emaciated by penance, again fattens his body by enjoying material objects. This, of course, is unfavorable for those practicing detachment. 22. The cranes continued dwelling on the shores of the lakes, although the shores were agitated during the rainy season. Just as materialistic persons with contaminated minds always remain at home despite the many disturbances there. During the rainy season, there are often mudslides around the shores of lakes, and thorny bushes, stones, and other debris sometimes accumulate there. Despite all these inconveniences, ducks and cranes continue meandering around the lake shores. Similarly, innumerable painful occurrences are always disturbing family life, but a materialistic man never even considers leaving his family in the hands of his grown-up sons and going away for spiritual improvement. He regards such an idea as shocking and uncivilized because he is completely ignorant of the absolute truth and his relationship to that truth. Srila Sanatana Goswami comments as follows on text 22. Gramya means persons who have no proper discrimination, and furthermore, they are durasaya. They have a faulty conception that the home is the place where one can acquire the perfection of all aims. Therefore, they continue to dwell there. The word anga, meaning O king, expresses either amazement or else pain. So Sukadeva Goswami is amazed that people will be so foolish that they stay locked in their household and not caring for spiritual life until the moment of their death. Whoa. The relatives, some crying sincerely surrounding their bed, some of them fake crying, just waiting to get the inheritance. Some of them thinking this, and some people thinking that. And just at the moment of death, and he wants to say something, but you can't say it because there's no energy. You can't even open your eyes, go blind. You lose the sense of smell. You lose the sense of taste. You lose the sense of being able to talk, eat, digest, open your mouth. And the last sense to lose its ability is the ears, so you can still hear. What should you hear? Hare Krishna. You should hear in the holy names of Krishna and have one's mind absorbed in that. So Sukadev, hearing how materialistic persons misuse their human life even to the very end, he's amazed and he's pained. Because he's very deeply realized how the soul is different from the body. The Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments on text 22 as follows. The cranes dwell intently on the lake shores, although the shores are littered with mud, thorns, and weeds. This is similar to the materialistic person remaining home despite so many disturbances. This example is unfavorable to follow. 23. When Indra sent forth his rains, the floodwaters broke through the irrigation dikes in the agricultural fields, because the way they do the agriculture in India and also in China, they build up walls around a small section of the field. Let's say one section will be as large as this room, not acres or hectares, but just a section like this. And they'll build a wall, say, this high out of mud and earth. And when it rains, that will capture the rainwater, so it will stay longer and soak into the earth. It won't run off somewhere. So especially for rice, but for all crops, this is required. Very efficient way to protect the rain from and make proper use of it. So when Indra sent forth his rains, the floodwaters broke through the irrigation dikes in the agricultural. So when there's so much rain, the dikes, the boundaries of the fields, they are broken through by all the rain. Just as in Kali Yuga, the atheist's false theories break down the boundaries of Vedic injunctions. Krishna Chakravarti Thakur comments. Indra, thinking himself the Lord, pours down excessive rains which smash the irrigation walls in the fields, just as in Kali Yuga, the materialists destroyed Dharma, or religious principles, which actually sustain society and men and families. One time I heard an interview, the BBC in Africa, where they were talking about how to solve the great problem of AIDS. So there's a big movement of people who say, well, the best way to solve it is abstaining from sex until one is married, and then staying with one wife. So they interviewed one young lady, late teenage lady, who was speaking like this, that they've all taken these vows of abstinence, celibacy, and like that. And then the next interview they did was where the lady was saying, this is the worst thing that could ever happen, this type of propaganda. And she was so vehement about it. It was incredible. Critical, nasty about it. This is terrible. This is setting back. This is setting back stopping AIDS for years and years and years by this terrible propaganda. It was incredible. So this is Kali Yuga materialists breaking down the walls of what is acceptable and not acceptable, what is proper and what is not proper, and ruining Dharma. And this is Kali Yuga. Dharma. No one knows what is the proper thing to do, the improper. No one can discriminate between what is good and what is bad. And people will do the bad thing, because the natural tendency of everyone is to enjoy the senses. But they don't get the enjoyment, the internal enjoyment. No matter how much sense pleasure the people get, there is no internal pleasure, peacefulness of mind and happiness of the mind through all the intoxication and all the illicit sex and all the gambling and all the meat eating. Adharmic, irreligious activities. And the result is that the senses are pleased, but people are more and more and more and more filled with anxiety and misery. Adharma. So this is Kali Yuga. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur again says, Indra, thinking himself the Lord, pours down excessive rains which smash the irrigation walls in the fields. Just as in Kali Yuga, the materialist destroyed Dharma. Kali is compared to Indra, the activities of the materialist to the rains, and the destruction of Vedic Dharma to the destruction of the dikes. This is an unfavorable example. 24. The clouds, impelled by the winds, released their nectarian water for the benefit of all living beings. Just as kings, instructed by their Brahmana priests, dispense charity to the citizens. Srila Prabhupada comments. In the rainy season, the clouds tossed by the wind deliver water that is welcomed like nectar. When the Vedic followers, the Brahmins, inspire rich men like kings and the wealthy mercantile community to give charity in the performance of great sacrifices, the distribution of such wealth is also nectarian. The four sections of human society, namely the Brahmins, the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas, the Sudras, are meant to live peacefully in a cooperative mood. This is possible when they are guided by expert Vedic Brahmins who perform sacrifice and distribute wealth equally. And the comment of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is very short. Just as a king, inspired by his priests, fulfills everyone's desires, so the clouds, incited by the winds, release rain. The analogy of the king is positive. Now at this time, the description of the rainy season, which is again, there were so many analogies, philosophical, or positive and negative, philosophical analogies attached to the description of Vrindavan during the rainy season, but ultimately it was basically a description of Vrindavan during the rainy season, with the clouds and the lightning and the lush grass and the trees all giving forth their newly grown sprouts and leaves, and the rivers flowing, everything green and lush, lightning jumping from cloud to cloud. And so this is the description of the beauty of Vrindavan during this time. And Vrindavan is the setting place for Krishna's pastimes. So now the shift is from the description of Vrindavan mostly to some activities of Krishna during the rainy season in Vrindavan. So 25. When the Vrindavan forest had thus become resplendent, filled with ripe dates and jambu fruits. So these are many fruits, but these were especially wonderful. Lord Krishna, surrounded by his cows and cowherd boyfriends, and accompanied by Sri Balaram, entered that forest to enjoy. So these are pastimes in the rainy season, pastimes in the Vrindavan forest. Srila Sanatana Goswami comments on this verse, text 25. Having thus described the rainy season, the Lord's particular pastimes during that season are going to be described. First, how he entered the forest is related in the verse beginning, Evam. That's this verse. Evam vanam tad vadishtam, the most resplendent forest. Krishna thus entered it. First, how he entered the forest is related in the verse beginning with Evam. The forest which is super excellent, being such super excellent by the above described characteristics of the rainy season, and which were full of opulence and full of beauty. The whole forest was gorgeous. Although within Sri Vrindavan, which encompasses simultaneously all the seasons, there is always the opulence of a variety of flowers and fruits. Nevertheless, with the dates and jambu fruits ripened dates and jambu fruits were mentioned especially. It is stated with the idea that at that time these were especially abundant. So there's always, this is one of the opulences of Vrindavan, that there are always fruits and flowers available everywhere. They're all sprouting and growing. And all the seasons are giving their fruits and flowers all at once, because in one season one flower comes and one fruit comes, another season another particular type of fruit or flower comes. But in Vrindavan, for Krishna's pleasure, all the seasons give their fruits and flowers. So the forest is especially resplendent. But in this rainy season, there are especially ripened dates and jambu fruits. Let me just read the verse again. While the Vrindavan forest had thus become resplendent, filled with ripe dates and jambu fruits, Lord Krishna, so the forest is being described, then Lord Krishna, surrounded by his cows and cowherd boyfriends, and accompanied by Lord Balaram, entered that forest to enjoy. So surrounded, Sanatana Goswami continues, means surrounded by the cowherd boys, who each were competing, me, with the hope of carrying the Lord's umbrella in order to protect him from the rain. They wanted to carry him. They all say, me, I want to do it. And also surrounded by the cows who were surrounding him in order to try to feed him their milk, because their udders were wet due to their great satisfaction, and because they had even greater affection for him, Krishna, than they did for their own calves. Or else they were surrounding him because it was possible for everyone at all times normally to attain the beauty of his divine face, and therefore on account of being attractive to the minds of all, they're surrounding Krishna, everyone trying to look at him. The cows, the boys, And because he's attractive to the minds of all, because he steals everyone's mind, he is called Hari, which means he who takes away. That Lord Hari was just then entering the forest. So he's so beautiful and all attractive. That is Krishna. The prefix pra is in reference to the special beauty of the forest and so forth. And this is hinted at the pastimes performed every day during the rainy season. So these things were going on every day. Every day. The cows and Krishna in this beautiful scene of the rainy season of the forest of Vrindavan. They were with Krishna and were like this setting. The Vrindavan forest is like the setting, and Krishna is the jewel, and surrounded by other jewels, little jewels, looking very beautiful. The cows had to move slowly, this is text 26, because of their weighty milk bags. But they quickly ran to the Supreme Personality of Godhead as soon as he called them, their affection for him causing their udders to become wet. Purport. Srila Prabhupada comments, the cows being fed by new grasses became very healthy, and their milk bags were all very full. When Lord Krishna called them by name, they immediately came to him out of affection, and in their joyful condition, the milk flowed from their bags. I'll read the comment of Sridhar Swami to text 26. Although the cows were moving slowly, when they were called by Krishna, they immediately came at a running pace. The reading snuta stani means their udders being wet. This is a special feature of beauty because during the rainy season there is a special abundance of such riches as milk, and also their special affection, which is an integral feature of the Lord's pastime, is also shown. They had special affection for Krishna. Or else the cow's exclusive affection for the Supreme Personality of Godhead is shown even in the special opulence of the foodstuffs of the rainy season and so on. Text 27. The Lord saw the joyful aboriginal girls, Vanokasan, Vana Okasa, means the residents of the forest. The Lord saw the joyful aboriginal girls of the forest, the trees dripping sweet sap and the mountain waterfalls whose resounding indicated that there were caves nearby. So the scene was wonderful. Wonderful and beautiful. Sanatan Goswami. Sridhar Swami comments on this 27th text. The forest dwellers are the aboriginal girls, and the Supreme Lord saw that they were happy. Similarly, he saw that the trees of the forest were dripping with sap. From the mountains there were waterfalls falling, and from their resounding, Krishna could ascertain that there were caves nearby. The residents of the forest were enlivened, as were all the trees of the forest. The Supreme Lord saw these features as such on all sides. So very, very beautiful. And this is every day that Krishna would take the cows out with all the boys into this beautiful scene. And in this way, it would be wonderful. When it rained, this is text 28, when it rained, the Lord would sometimes enter a cave or the hollow of a tree to play and eat roots and fruits. Purport. Srila Sanatana Goswami explains that during the rainy season, bulbs and roots are very tender and palatable, and Lord Krishna would eat them along with the wild fruits found in the forest. Lord Krishna and his young boyfriends would sit in the hollow of a tree or within a cave and enjoy pastimes while waiting for the rain to stop. Srila Sanatana Goswami, we'll read a little more of his comment. It's a text 28. Kvachit. Kvachit vanaspati grode. Kvatsa means sometimes, vanaspati, a tree, krode, in the hollow, guhayam, in a cave, cha, or in a cave, abiva, shati, while it was raining. So kvatsit means within a certain, or else sometimes. And by the word cha, this word kvatsit can be applied to both the hollows of the trees. Kvatsit means sometimes. Or in the caves. So sometimes they would go into the caves and sometimes into a hollow of the tree and enjoy playing to escape from the rain too. Or else by his special potency, Krishna would enter or sit down in both places, in a cave and at the same time. He would divide himself to be with certain boys in the caves and certain cows in the caves and certain boys in the hollows of the trees. Because he's Bhagavan, he can do this. By the word abhi is expressed the excessiveness of the rain. And in this way, even in apparently ordinary pastimes, the Lord reveals by his mystic opulences, his status of Godhead by dividing himself up. Thus both the hollow of the tree and the caves belong in the same category, and both are very expansive. And it is to be understood that his companions also accompanied him there. Rami means he performed pastimes, or else he was happy. How? What made him happy? This is replied to by the words beginning kanda, because there are many, kanda means roots, because there are many of these found during the rainy season, and because they are then tender, they are nice to take. Fruits, not being explicitly mentioned, because they have already been indicated before. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, when rain was pouring down on all sides from the clouds, Krishna entered, running with all haste into a hollow of a tree or else into a cave. Bulbs and roots are distinguished. Do you know the difference between a bulb and a root? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur will give us technical distinction between the two, because one is round and the other is long. The roots are the long ones and the bulbs are the round ones. Text 29. Krishna would take his meal of boiled rice and yogurt sent from home in the company of Lord Shankarshan Balaram and the cowherd boys who regularly ate with them. They would all sit down to eat on a large stone near the water. Sanatana Goswami says, this verse begins, dadyodhanam, rice with yogurt, because at the time these were very abundant and very sweet. They were sent by Mother Yasoda. There's that twice boiled, there's rice that you boil it twice. What is it? There's a special name for that. Twice boiled rice. Huh? I don't know, but one time you have to boil it to take it out of the husk, and then you boil it a second time to cook it, and this rice is very cooling, and therefore it's there's a tendency to want to eat it, especially if you're a rice eater in the hot seasons. The rainy season is very hot. Here it rains when it's cold, but in Vrindavan it rains when it's hot. But this rice cannot be offered to the deities because it is cooked twice. So, but they would eat this dadi odanam. I don't know if this is the same one, but this is just rice with curd. Because at this time, these were very abundant and sweet. They were sent by Mother Yasoda and brought forward at the appropriate time by the cowherd boys. Mother Yasoda, every hour, she would be sending different foods for the boys and Krishna. Or else they in turn approached Krishna to offer their own boiled rice and curd and yogurt, since there was an abundance of yogurt to moisten it with. The stone that they sat on was beautiful on account of its dirt being washed away by the rain. Using the stone as their plate, they ate near the water. This is because at that time, no matter where they were, there was water. Or else, in order to facilitate drinking water, they chose a stone which is situated near the water. Some bojaniyar means with his collected friends who were qualified to eat with him, since he ate together with them on the same stone. Well, the idea that Rama, Balaram, joined them in sitting all together is stated, first with the idea of non-difference of all the cowherd boys, that he had gathered them together, and then he ate in the company of Shankarshan. So this, let me read a little more. Sambhojanaya means that he first of all sat them down by rows, and then he sat down Lord Sri Balaram in the middle. After serving them out and seeing that they ate fully, he then himself partook of the boiled rice and mixed with yogurt. So there's different meanings. Some they sat and ate together, other that Krishna sat them down and then he served everyone, all his friends. So he himself partook of that boiled rice mixed with yogurt, which was sent by his relatives at home, or a stone near the water. And then Sanatana Goswami says, even nowadays, everyone can see the Lord's eating place on the banks of his kund. So it's not exactly clear, is it? If he means Samakund, it's not clear where that is, that there's his eating place, but the places where he used to eat, the stones that he sat on. But in other places, and where is it? Kamivan. There are the places where Krishna used to eat with the boys out in the middle of the fields. And the cows are there, they're the rocks. You have seen? Yes. Later. Huh? Madon? Bhajantali. Bhajantali, yes. And there's a, there's a white, one of the rocks has a white mark in it. From the yogurt, yes? So these places are still available to be seen. But you better go fast, because they won't be available forever. Because everything disappears. Even these things are disappearing. The trees are dying. Years ago we saw one of the deepest of places, Uddhav Kyari, that had many old trees in it. And at that time, even compared to 40 years ago, there were a small percentage of the trees. But it was still a forest. But now, completely gone. And they're planting eucalyptus trees or something like that instead. Huh?
Playing cricket.
And they're playing cricket there, of course. Or nearby, anyway. Right near Nandagam. So go quickly. Take advantage of the time. Use our lives properly and taste the sweetness of Krishna consciousness. Now it's 29. Just read the next two verses, and that ends this section of Krishna's pastimes. Lord Krishna watched the contented bulls, calves, and cows sitting on the green grass and grazing with closed eyes. And what were the cows saying? And what were the peacocks saying? What were the cows? Now, some people should be peacocks. And some cows, and this way we can have a symphony. And some should be monkeys. So some are Vrindavan monkeys. You know that sometimes they make the sound. when they're calling for, yeah? They're calling when there's a baby monkey and he can't find his mother. And after, when they're at a certain age, the monkey mothers leave them. Before that, they're always holding to mothers, but they're big after a while. So the monkeys leave them, the big monkeys, the mother monkeys, and then the baby monkeys. They're not used to it yet. So all night long, Okay, monkeys, peacocks, cows, bulls, all together. So Lord Krishna watched the contented bulls and calves and cows sitting on the green grass and grazing with closed eyes. And he saw that the cows were tired from the burden of the heavy milk bags. Thus, observing the beauty and opulence of Vrindavan's rainy season, a perennial source of great happiness, the Lord offered all respect to that season, which was expanded from his own internal potency. Short purport here, and then we'll read the comment of Sanatana Goswami. The lush beauty of the rainy season in Vrindavan is meant to enhance the pleasure pastimes of Sri Krishna. Thus, to set the scene for the Lord's loving affairs, his internal potency makes all the arrangements described in this chapter. And Srila Sanatana Goswami comments. The reason for his sitting the cows down and so on is stated by the words beginning triptan. Because at that time, them being in one place, an abundance of tender grass, they were able to achieve the pleasure in a short moment by filling their bellies. They didn't have to wander because there was so much grass everywhere. The word cha expresses the aggregation of the stated sequence by which it is understood that the cows also were made to sit down. The reason for their being sat down in particular is stated by the words beginning sva. Thus, by their being sat down in a particular sequence, the relative importance of the bulls and so on can be deduced, and it is on account of their greater importance that the bulls, cows, and calves are mentioned, whereas the buffaloes and other animals should be understood as implied. They're all there. Tam means that the above described opulence of the rainy season, the beauty of the forest, or else that indescribable opulence of the forest, and thus, since the beauty of the forest in the rainy season has only been alluded to, other aspects of beauty which have not been stated, such as that of the deer and the buffalo, can also be assumed, as is described somewhat in the Vishnu Purana. At that time, the two lords, Krishna and Balaram, wandered with pleasure in the company of the cowherd boys in that great forest, which was filled with maddened peacocks and cranes. Sometimes they danced and sang together with the cowherd boys, and sometimes they wandered afar, and sometimes they would take shelter at the cool base of a tree. Sometimes they ornamented themselves with garlands of kadamba flowers and garlands of peacock feathers, or sometimes they decorated themselves with red oxide minerals. Sometimes they desired to go to sleep in the beds of leaves, and sometimes they called out loudly in imitation of a thundering cloud. Before ending the class, just read a little bit from Ananda Vrindavan Champu, Srila Kavi Karnapur. Just a short description of something in the rainy season. One auspicious day during the rainy season, the cows grazed on the fresh green grass growing in a beautiful valley beside Govardhan. The jewels and precious stones on the surface of Govardhan Hill radiated a beautiful glow. Krishna sat on a throne made of smooth stones next to a waterfall flowing with fragrant water from the top of the hill. Enjoying the atmosphere, he laughed and joked with his friends. Krishna's boyfriends played a game using some crystalline stones having a dark blue mirror-like surface. While they pushed and shoved each other, a lightning bolt suddenly flashed out of the clouds. It seemed like the clouds cast an angry look just to stop the boys playing. Becoming frightened, the boys ran away. They returned upon regaining their courage. But when the clouds thundered once more, the boys ran away again. Picking up some creepers, they pretended to beat the clouds in retaliation. And the clouds, however, responded by drenching them with a quick spray of rainwater. At that time, the joyful cowherd boys painted Krishna's body with colored mineral powders. As his friends surrounded him and happily danced for his pleasure, Krishna floated in a river of bliss. How would you like to float a river of bliss. Then he wandered around Govardhan Hill performing various ecstatic pastimes. As Krishna's heart is full of rasa, enjoying ecstatic dealings with his devotees. Krishna's heart is full of rasa and decorated with the mark of Lakshmi. Similarly, Govardhan Hill is full of beauty and full of a wealth of fresh fruit and edible roots during the rainy season. Krishna relished the sweet natural taste of the various fruits and roots. Krishna relished the sweet and natural taste of the various fruits and roots brought by his intimate friends, whose hearts surged with happiness. Bounded by their pure devotion, Krishna easily finished all the foodstuffs collected from Govardhan Hill. With his white teeth shining attractively as he smiled in satisfaction, Krishna easily stole the hearts of every living entity. Krishna's friends quickly prepared his favorite flavored pan from betel nuts, pure white lime paste, fragrant fruit juice of banana that smelled like camphor, and the other items that they had previously collected. Thus being served in various ways, Krishna enjoyed his pastimes on Govardhan Hill. Krishna took shelter in the caves of Govardhan Hill whenever the clouds sprinkled water. Sitting there, biding his time until the rain stopped, Krishna appeared like a beautiful baby elephant. The boys entertained that enchanting person by playing a game of shouting loudly into the back of the cave and laughing at the echo. Vibrating deep angry sounds, they said, "Who are you? What are you saying?" The cave filled with clamor. Ordinarily, it is offensive to mistreat a giver of shelter. Yet this irreverent behavior in the caves did not fault the coward boys, but embellished them with the ability to please Krishna. Indeed, they blessed the cave by their presence. Meanwhile, outside the cave, it appeared that the rain smiled with its teeth of hailstones falling everywhere. Krishna's friends ran outside to pick up the particles of ice and bring them back to the cave. With hands folded as if holding flowers in Pushpanjali, like this, they offered the hailstones as flowers to Krishna's lotus feet. When the rain stopped, Krishna, whose face outshines the beauty of the full moon, and the coward boys, overflowing with bliss, they left the cave and ran to the top of Govardhan Hill. Krishna sat peacefully on a beautiful emerald rock. What color is emerald rock? Green. That glittered brightly after being washed by the rain. His friends fanned him with a pure white chamara that saturated the air with the pleasing fragrance of musk. Hari, who removes all misery, sat in great happiness while gazing at the beauty of the forest, which appeared like a reflection of his own body. Glancing over the earth and splendorous sky, Krishna called the cows, "Hey Davali, hey Kali, hey Shavali," and mooing in response, "Mmm." Those are calves. The cows ran across the valley to stand beside Krishna. During the rainy season, the forest of Vrindavan looked elegant and effulgent. As Krishna's body appears as if without qualities when viewed from a distance, the forest lost its detail when illuminated by the bright clouds. The expansive forest resembled Krishna's attractive body, surrounded by buzzing bees and decorated with a kadamba garland fragrant with honey pollen. Wonderful. Just let me read a little more. As the brilliance of the Srivatsa, the jewel, mark beautifies Krishna's body, the forest, excuse me, not the jewel, but the white marking on Krishna's body. The forest served as a beautiful playground for herding the cows and calves. Krishna's body glowed with golden yellow cloth, and the forest shone with the sun's rays, rivaling the radiance of the clouds. Impelled by deep attraction, the doe-eyed gopis desired to see Krishna. Similarly, the forest abounded with the glance of the deer, restless with attraction for Krishna. As Krishna's hands have long, delicate fingers, the branches of the trees were covered with tender, fresh leaves. Fragrant herbs scented the forest. The emerald sprouts covering the ground tinted the trees with various pleasing colors due to the reflections. Being shielded from the sun's rays by the thick foliage and spotted with jewel-like lakes fed by fresh, fast-flowing streams, the earth felt cool and refreshing. Moving clouds resembled clumps of herbs periodically covering the pleasing sky that wore the sun like an earring. That sky, spreading out in all directions and ringed at its edges by the expansive forest, appeared to merge with the forest. Playing the purest notes on his flute, Krishna looked like a blue sapphire pillar standing in the forest. That pillar held the flag of the abode of Lakshmi as he stood amidst the circle of his fortunate and astonishing cowherd friends. Krishna twirled the edge of his yellow cloth while admiring the remarkable combination of sky and forest. Then he called out the names of his cows in deep, clear syllables. Without any fear of attack from ferocious animals like tigers, the cows grazed peacefully on the sweet grass at the base of Govardhan Hill. But as soon as they heard Krishna's voice, all the cows immediately became stunned, and they appeared like toy cows. Due to their heavy weight, the cows moved forward in a crooked manner. Yet as they got close to Krishna, they galloped quickly and trampled the grass under their hooves as they went to the merciful Lord. Crying and mooing over and over, the cows assembled before Krishna. He addressed them, "Do not stay here any longer." The cows respected the Lord's order and immediately proceeded to the valley. The bees hummed in tune with the vibration of Krishna's flute. Krishna's friends, who are bound to him in love and forever assist him in his playful pastimes, slowly climbed down Govardhan Hill. As Krishna walked home, it seemed as though he stole the minds of the various birds and beasts who could not go with him. Thus, throughout the rainy season, Krishna and his cowherd boyfriends enjoyed various fun-filled pastimes along with the wonderful cows of Vrindavan. Krishna's jeweled ankle bells chimed sweetly as he strolled gracefully along the plateau. The purifying dust of Vrindavan now covered the lotus feet of Krishna, which are worshipped by the jeweled crowns of Brahma, Shiva, and Parvati. Krishna moved in measured steps as he walked behind the cows. He impressed the soft, moist breast of Mother Earth with the lotus flower, elephant gourd, conch shell, and other marks on the bottom of his feet. The touch of Krishna's tender feet relieved Mother Earth from the painful burden of demons like Agha, Baka, Putan, and others. Thus Krishna and the Sakas returned home. The rainy season ki jay, Sivindavandam ki jay, Krishna's cowherding pastimes ki jay, Srila Prabhupada ki jay, Vora Bhaktivinoda ki jay. But they don't know that. They don't know that they don't grow old.
They don't know.
No.
So they're basically always eternally.
Just like any young boy. Does he ever think he's going to grow old?
No.
So why should Krishna think he's going to grow old? Why should the cows? Why ruin their fun by telling him they're going to grow old?
So they're basically the spiritual world, they will always be every day enjoying this kind of.
Every day enjoying. No having to drive taxi cabs.
Yes. I just want to say a story in the taxi cab. And
you want to tell a taxi cab story? Yes, you want to read one?
Yeah, Tell one.
Okay. What is
it?
Let's listen to this one. Bring that. Bring the microphone over.
Yesterday I met two old ladies, and they are in their 80s, and they are widows. They lost their husband already some 10 years ago, some 40 years ago, some 30 years ago. So, but they kept talking and talking, you know, about themselves only, you know, how my grandchildren is, how my son is, how my daughter is. So keep glorifying how fortunate they are to you know, have their son, you know, my grandson. Everyone loves my grandson. He's so adorable. The doctor liked him and all that thing. But yet their body is deteriorating, and they're going to the hospital regularly to check up for, you know, oh, I just have this problem with the doctor, I even had this operation, now they're still not recovered yet. But their body is dying, but yet their mind, they always want to have to glorify their position. But in my heart, I was saying how they're so attached to their body, that I and mine, you know, my son, my house, my car, my children, it's amazing. And the more older you are, if you don't become Christian conscious when you're young, the harder you will become Christian conscious when you get old. Very difficult.
And therefore, Sukadeva Goswami used, I can't remember which word it was, but he said, felt amazed at this move and also pain and softness of heart. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, what did you do?
I just prayed in the heart. I think Krishna, please help them. I don't know what to do with that. They're so engrossed. They're just talking about themselves, keep yakking and yakking about their life. You know how great they are, how they great are their grandchildren are, how great their son is, how professional their daughters, their sons are working in this field and that field. You know, nothing but just that. And yet they are already 80 years old, they are already crumbling in their heart, crumbling in their body, crumbling in their position. They're going to the doctor practically every 2 or 3 weeks. It's free of charge, they get free taxi ride.
How fortunate we are, we get a free taxi ride to the hospital.
Yeah.
Like, it could be worse, you might have to pay for it, but it certainly could be better. Thank you.
Hare Krishna.